The choices you have to make can be difficult and may alter your life forever. When you're under too much pressure, it's hard to go it alone. Now you don't have to. Whether you struggle with anxiety, depression, time management, family issues, relationships, self-sabotage, guilt, shame, or just need some wisdom and helpful insight, this program is the answer. Healing Conversations with Kamish Nunley. Kamish is a licensed mental health therapist with HealingYourHiddenHurts.com and who also shares her knowledge as an expert author, speaker, and radio personality. You don't have to just survive. You can thrive. Here's Kamish Nunley.
Welcome to another episode of Healing Conversations. I'm your host, Kamish Nunley, and happy Earth Day to everyone out there. And today is going to be a really, really fun show. We'd like to welcome back to our show for the second time, radio personality, youth minister, and marriage and family therapist, Nathan McGuire. Welcome back to the show, Nathan.
Hello, Kamish. Thank you so much for having me on your show today.
Absolutely. Today, Nathan and I will be exploring the concept of fear and how to free yourself from the bondages fear creates in your life. If you would like to call in with a question or comment for our guest today, please dial 888-463-6748. We also like to invite you to join our Facebook group page at facebook.com/groups/healingconversations. Send us an email just to let us know you're listening. To do so, please visit TalkZone.com and click on Healing Conversations. Today's show is brought to you by HealingYourHiddenHurts.com. Welcome back again, Nathan. Why don't we start off today with you telling our listeners a little bit about you, what you do, and what has led you to do work so closely with the concept of fear?
Well, my name is Nathan McGuire. I am a marriage and family counselor right here in Indianapolis, Indiana, and I have been working with people individually for some 10 years now, and just recently launched my own practice, and has kind of turned into more of a conglomerate of sorts. So I started out doing therapy, working with families, and then started connecting with churches. Then I started to do a life coaching piece with individuals and upwardly mobile people that just wanted more out of life and wanted to be more successful in what they were doing. And then just start connecting with people to be a resource in the community when it comes to mental health, counseling, grieving, workshops. And, you know, I wanted to take this on to the radio airways. I had an opportunity to do so, and it just started to grow, and now I kind of am able to come on weekly and beginning to really enjoy that. So I got a lot coming on, and recently, Kamish, I just wanted to say thank you. I've been able to connect with you on different levels. The first time I came on your show, I did think you were a 17-year-old that was awesome and doing a lot of things, and realized you're actually a grown person. You just look very
absolutely
young. And you've just been really helpful in introducing me to people, and so I'm just really blessed to connect with you to kind of help further this work.
Yes, yes, and I love the work that we do together, and it's been a pleasure getting to know you as well. Now, fear is, as you know, a very powerful and complex emotion. You know, so complex, in fact, that you don't know or even realize when you're expressing it, and sometimes even when you're behaving within fear. And people buy into fear and feel fear because they don't have the language to attach to what it actually is. Could you, Nathan, could you break down for us how you define fear?
Yes. As I begin to do this work with people who suffered with anxiety and worry, this is what I found out. I would begin to work with people, and they would describe kind of this narrative that was cyclical and begin to just permeate the room, and it was the same story, and this is what it would sound like. Someone would come in and talk about the fact that they begin to have this worst-case scenario that they thought about all the time. And when they would go through this story, they would talk about the fact that there was something in their life, some time in their life, where they were traumatized. And during this trauma, they would begin to hear something that would tell them, this is how you can never have to experience this trauma again. So something that hurt them, something that was painful, something that changed the way they look at life, that really was traumatic to them, abuse, rape, car accident, abandonment, a parent leaving them and never returning. So they would begin to talk about the fact that, you know, they have now discovered how to keep themselves from experiencing that pain again, and what they grasped onto was control. So they believe that if they could control everything, they could keep the very thing that they feared from happening. And we know, Kamish, that that's a setup for failure, because no one can control everything. So once they then fell into this wrong thinking, they would begin to go about life trying to control everything. And they believe that if they could get control of everything, then they could keep the thing from happening that scared them or brought fear into their life. Now, I would begin to ask my clients, what is it like trying to control everything? And, of course, we know it's exhausting. It overwhelms you. It gives you headaches. It gives you panic attacks. You suck the air out of the room when you're around people, because it does not just go into controlling your life. It goes into controlling everyone else's life, how they think, where they go, what they're doing, what they have on. It does not stop. Then, Commissioner, as I was beginning to talk to them, they would talk about how this control would then tell them another story, that just in case you can't control everything, which we, of course, know you cannot. Just in case you can't control everything, imagine the worst-case scenario. So if the worst-case scenario happens, if you lose control and then the worst-case scenario happens, then you won't be caught off guard, because the worst-case scenario, you've already imagined it. So when it happens, you won't be caught off guard. You won't have to panic about it. Now, we know that if you're imagining the worst-case scenario happening every day, your brain cannot always delineate something you're imagining every day and something that has not happened. To your mind and spirit, it's actually happening every day. So your heart is racing. Your mind is racing. You're irritable. You're snapping on people because you're imagining a nightmare happening every day to prepare yourself for the nightmare to happen. So in that case, you then cause the nightmare to happen. Now, I used to see this all the time, Kamish, with mothers who had been traumatized. Let's say they had been sexually violated. So then they have a daughter and they're scared every time this daughter goes to spend the night at someone's house, or every time this daughter is going away from the mother. And so they would begin to control and literally hold the daughter captive, right? This is what we call helicopter parents sometimes. This is what we call overprotective. So what would happen is, because she's not preparing this daughter how to leave her, how to experience life, how to mature, as soon as this daughter gets a little freedom, she gets out there and goes berserk, finds herself in vulnerable situations, and sometimes gets violated. Now the very thing the mother didn't want to happen is now happening, because she wanted to control and constrict her. And so this is kind of the narrative. I call it the fear aria, if you will. It's a song. Sure. That is sung when my clients come into the room, and I kind of define anxiety and worry so they can see and hear fear and hear this song and then begin to recognize it.
Yes, yes. And what are the different types of fear? Because I know when we talk about fear, we think about how it is differentiated from general worry and anxiety. But what is fear in terms of the core of us? What are the different types?
So when I'm talking to clients and I'm trying to kind of delineate how fear works, I just kind of sum it up in three ways. There's fight, flight, and then paralyzation. So there is a fear that paralyzes one, where you can't move, you can't make a decision. You find yourself going, trying to get a job or trying to elevate, and you just feel like you can't do anything. You feel exhausted. So there are those who are paralyzed by fear. Then there are those who they want to fight everything. As soon as they get scared or someone begins to confront them, they're the fighters. They're the person that feels like, I have to attack you because I feel my back is pinned against the wall, so I want to get in an argument. I want to yell. I want to shout. Then there are those who are flight. They run. You know, any confrontational situation, any time where they are confronted about something, they want to run. They want to hide. Married couples, when they come together, it's those turtles and hailstormers, those people that when there's a confrontation, they back down, withdraw, kind of go into a shell and want to get away from the situation. And then you have those who want to argue, right? They want to keep bringing it up because they feel that if, you know, you get away from this topic, we're going to keep talking about it, so I'm going to follow you around and yell at you. So these are the different types of fear. Now, some people, you know, they get worried or anxious before they go and speak. And, you know, that's normal. But some people are paralyzed. They cannot operate when they go before people. And so then they become, you know, they become perfectionists, kind of exhausting themselves before every opportunity, because they hear a voice just simply saying, you cannot handle this, and you are not safe.
Right.
That's the overwhelming voice that those who struggle deeply with fear, they hear, and that is just the simple voice that says to them, you are not safe.
Absolutely. And what do you think causes or triggers, or what causes and triggers do you notice most often induces fear in people?
In my work, I found that when I'm talking to people about fear, the root cause has to do with a traumatic experience. And typically it has to do with sometime in their childhood. So when we talk about these fears, I begin to look into their story. I'm big with Michael White, who was, he's really the father of narrative therapy. Mm-hmm. And he had the ability to look in one story and find the problem and help people to externalize the problem and say, the problem is not you. This is the problem. Let's look at the problem. So it's the art of looking into one story and finding out when is the first occurrence where you heard this voice tell you you're not safe. And so I find, Kamish, it's usually in the childhood. It has to do with something in their life they experience that goes way back when they were growing up. Sometimes it is a sudden thing like a rape or a car accident. But most times I find that where people learn how to deal with that rape or that car accident actually occurs in their childhood, where they get the tools to overcome fear or to let fear literally hold them captive.
Yeah, yeah. And do you ever normalize fear for your clients? Like, do you ever say that fear is okay? I remember I sent you, I think it was a YouTube maybe a week or so ago, and the guy on there said, fears are okay. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, there's a lot of work done on fear. There's books, you know, there's spiritual perspectives, there's the, you know, secular perspectives, there's clinical perspectives, and I think we all are trying to wrestle with this thing we all call fear and how to wrap our arms around it. I do think, you know, there is a normalization when a car door slams or I'm down in the basement and the lights are off and I hear a weird noise that, you know, you tend to jump. I think there's a normal part of fear. And I think it was John Maxwell that was kind of talking about, you know, the things you get in your stomach, the kind of the nervous anxiety. And I do think there's some truth to that. I don't think that every single fear is terrible. The fear that I typically hone in on and help people overcome are fears that paralyze your life and keep you from becoming everything I believe you were created to be. So they're fears that sabotage your relationships or opportunities. They're fears that keep you from embracing life as one should. And so I kind of delineate between just the simple fears that come into people that give them a nervous or the you know, the butterflies in the stomach versus fears that people have dealt with their entire life that hold them captive.
Absolutely. And we have about a minute before our first break. Could you tell me, do you think fear is gender-based? Are women more likely to experience it than men?
I don't think so. The work that I've done, I do see the ways and the nuances of how fear attacks men and women. I do see that. I don't think fear discriminates, if you will. I don't think it cares what race you are, what gender you are. I don't think it cares what class you come from. I think it has one goal, and that is to keep you from having the life that you're supposed to have. I do believe that fear has an agenda, and that's what kind of separates me from some of the work that I've seen that people do with fear. I really do think that fear is more of an enemy, and I think that it wants to control us. When people are raptured with fear, you in essence become a slave to it. You're no longer empowered. You are someone that is led by something that you have no control over, and you let your control go over to it. So, no, I don't think so. I think it'd be foolish to say such a thing because I think it would then give fear an advantage if you
Absolutely. Well, let's take our first break, but when we return, can fear coexist with faith? Join us as we venture into what the Bible tells us about fear right here on Healing Conversations. Stay tuned.
The effects of trauma can last a lifetime. Pain, confusion, anxiety, depression, grief. Healing Your Hidden Hurts is a safe, serene environment dedicated to guiding you along your journey toward healing. The compassionate clinicians at Healing Your Hidden Hurts can provide the support, advocacy, and expertise to help you move forward again, regain stability. From fear to faith, despair to hope. Visit HealingYourHiddenHurts.com. Speak to a clinician today. Don't go at it alone. HealingYourHiddenHurts.com.
Now, back to Healing Conversations with Kamish Nunley on TalkZone.com.
Welcome back to Healing Conversations. I'm your host, Kamish Nunley. And if you're just joining us today, we are discussing how to break the bondage and debilitating effects of fear with youth minister Nathan McGuire. If you have a question or comment about today's topic, please call 888-463-6748. Now, Nathan, before the break, you had the opportunity to share with us what fear is and how it can cripple our way of thinking and of being. And so now I'd like to venture into what the Bible says about fear. And I can only go off of my limited knowledge in terms of what the Bible has to say, and then also my personal experiences with different ministers, pastors, reverends. And I oftentimes hear them say things like, fear is the absence of faith. And if we're fearful, we do not have enough faith in our Redeemer, which automatically I'm thinking, okay, guilt and shame. I also hear clergy members talk about the importance of fearing only God. What are your thoughts of fear coexisting with faith, and what does the Bible actually teach us on this topic?
Well, Kamish, this is actually one of my favorite topics. I could talk for days about this. I'm going to try to keep it.
I know.
And I know you're going to help me stay structured here, but When I went to Bible college, and then I went to CTS, Christian Theological Seminary, and there was this big schism between theology and psychology. So much so, I remember some of my professors at Bible college just telling me, you know, that they really didn't want me to go to seminary, didn't want me to go into the clinical field, because they felt that they were somehow in opposition one to another. When I went to CTS, they were big in integration, and that was the ability to intertwine the two and bring the best of both worlds together. Well, I didn't realize that I was actually doing that And it was kind of just natural for me to do so because of my spiritual orientation and getting into understanding how the clinical works, looking at the unconscious works and how it works. So this is what I discovered, Kamish. I was doing narrative therapy where Michael White talks about you are not the problem. The problem is the problem. And that lined up with some of the things that I believe spiritually, where, you know, spiritually, and especially Judeo-Christian beliefs and from the Old and New Testament, they talk about fear and the enemy and sin, that this is an attack on you. And one of the texts that I use that kind of helped me in my therapeutic process and the modality of narrative therapy is this. It kind of coins it. It says that God has not given you the spirit of fear, but power, love, and a sound mind, right? So I know clinically that, and you know this too, Kamish, that think of all the things that are annihilated when you are walking in fear. You don't have any power. You have an inability to love unconditionally, and your self-control or mindfulness, your ability to understand how to be still, are eradicated. Mm-hmm. So when someone goes boo, or you see a man on the street and something tells you, give this man some money, something tells you he's going to hurt you, don't do that, he could cut your throat, you're powerless. I'm panicking. I don't know what to do. All these things are literally the definition of fear. It says it right there in the text. It says that if you walk in fear, your ability to have power, your sense of loving unconditionally, and your ability to control oneself is gone. So we see that with the isms. What is racism? It is a fear of a different race that does not look like me, so I need to be protected from it, and I think that they are going to do me harm, so I need to move to a different neighborhood. I need to lock my door. What is sexism? It is the fear of the sexes that if we come together, that they're going to hurt me, I'm going to hurt them, they're dangerous to me and my children, I'm dangerous to them, so I must build a fence, I must war against them. What is classism? It's I'm fearful of this class. If they get power, they're going to take from me. If I get power, they're going to I'm going to take from them. We're just fearful. So it's an inability for us to coexist. And the whisper of fear is you are not safe.
Absolutely.
The scriptural texts talk about fear as an enemy. It says that it's coming to rob you of something. It's coming to rob you of your joy and your peace and separate you from the love of God. So when I began to do this, I was like, Commissioner, I said, wow, this is everything God was saying. This is everything that the Holy Spirit is saying to us. Don't walk in this spirit, for it keeps us divided. And it keeps us from allowing us to love one another and connecting with one another. And it's everything Freud and Carl Jung were saying, too. You know, if we could all just get along, you know. And understand that fear has an enemy, and it is us.
Right, right. Now, what would you say to a Christian who constantly fears maybe persecution from God, and it's causing them every day debilitating effects on their lives?
One of my favorite pieces of work is with people of faith and people that claim not to have any faith. Because I find that we are all struggling with the same thing. It is an inability to embrace unconditional love. So the Christian that is struggling with shame, is struggling with guilt, it's, you know, and everything that I've done, it usually goes back to the fact that they have never experienced true unconditional love, typically from a parent. So we project then onto God that he is the same way. Mm-hmm. It says that fear or the enemy literally is the one that brings condemnation. God brings what we call scripturally conviction. This is conviction. You can do better. You made a mistake, but you can do all things through Christ that strengthens you. As a matter of fact, greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world. No weapon formed against you shall prosper. I have made you better. You can do it. You can get up. I love you. Condemnation is you're nothing. You're nobody. You knew this was going to happen. You know God doesn't love you. You got to be perfect. You got to do this. You got to fast. You got to pray. Didn't you say something crazy to the old lady? Oh, you had road rage. Oh, Lord, you just can't get it together. You're just no good. You didn't even make it to your council. Did you tithe? I don't think you tithe. I don't think you gave anything there. It is a constant condemnation where you don't feel worthy and you're trying to become a workaholic. You're trying to work yourself to God. It's an inability to receive. And the text clearly says that that spirit is not God. That spirit is fear attacking you, keeping you separate from God.
Right, right. Now, I've also heard some pastors say that fear is the beginning of wisdom. And I know before we took a break, we asked, are all fears detrimental to our way of being? And it sounds like here that they are reinforcing that fear can kind of be a portal to understanding or self-reflection or wisdom. What are your thoughts on this?
So the clinical piece in doing therapy, Commission, I had to say, I first had to go through it myself, and it has been a truly healing process. Sometimes I believe that I used to be a slave, and I had a master. And going through this therapeutic process has allowed me to be free. So when I used to hear these scriptural texts and pastors preaching, I realized that, Commission, I had no idea what in the world they were talking about. And I'm learning that a lot of Christians do not know what pastors are talking about. Sometimes I'm convinced some pastors don't know what they're talking about. So when you're talking about fear of the Lord, it's an honor or respect. So it looks like this, Commission. Mm-hmm. Now, when I'm making a decision, and I used to have these anxieties that I could not do this or I could not do that, I have a new equation in my head. Nathan listening to fear equals disaster. Mm-hmm. Nathan having a fear of the Lord and listening to what does the Lord say versus what I or fear says equals success. Mm-hmm. So I now fear just doing what I think or what I feel versus doing things that line up to health. So my scriptural and my clinical piece tells me that I should love my children unconditionally. Mm-hmm. I fear not loving my kids unconditionally. I fear not being committed to my wife because God and his his ultimate wisdom says that being committed to one woman equals health. So I fear doing things in my own life. I fear having major commitments and just, letting them go and not caring and not honoring them. I fear not loving my brother. I fear, Commish, not looking at the plank in my eye and looking at the speck in my brother's eye. These are things now I have a new fear. I fear doing my own will and just doing what I want to do, how I want to do it. And the fear of the Lord is wisdom. So now I access all of this wisdom because I now fear just doing things that are not good and are not healthy. And so it allows me to honor what is healthy. Mm-hmm. Where there was a time I actually feared not doing my own will. So if I'm in a situation, well, there was a time I wouldn't tell anybody, Commish. I'd hold it in, and I'd wait till it was a catastrophe, a crisis before opening my mouth because I feared that, I didn't want to ask for help, and if I asked for help, I'd get ridiculed. But now I fear holding it all in and waiting to the last minute because I know that's not wise.
Right.
It doesn't make any sense to do that. And so that's what it means when it talks about fearing the Lord versus having a fear that is debilitating, that captures your spirit and paralyzes you.
Sure. Now, my experience of fear and faith when I have talked with Christians I will tell some spiritual individuals some part of my pathology, which I'm very aware of, being a clinician, and how it plays a role in my life. And in turn, they'll tell me things like, girl, you better not speak that into existence.
Mm.
They'll say things like that, or they'll say, you know, the devil's listening to you. You should instead just pray about it and have faith that God will take it away. And it felt as if they were telling me to avoid it. And I'm thinking, okay, you're telling a clinician, a trauma survivor, and now trauma specialist to avoid what the lessons of her pain have taught her, that she can then turn around and help others who have survived similar incidences. Have you ever heard clergy say this to their congregation where, and do you condone this type of way of handling fear or other pathological concepts like guilt and shame?
Now, this is one of those very adult, nuanced conversations, so I'm going to walk it slowly. And I know exactly what you're talking about. It's actually something, Kamish, I have been set free from, because in my past I would have said, girl, don't speak that over your life. Don't say that. The devil is a lie, right? Where we kind of get caught up in this work, and sometimes our pastors are actually saying it the right way, but us good saints will take that and interpret it the wrong way. So this is, and if you're out there, if you're a Christian listening to me, or if you've been abused by a Christian because they got this wrong, if you're a clinician out there that is reaching those of spiritual orientation, I want you to listen very closely to how I try to explain it. So there's a text that says, mourn with those who are in mourning, rejoice with those who rejoice. Okay? So it's saying match their affect. And until I became a clinician, I didn't understand the importance of mirroring one's emotions so they feel heard. So when we are Christians, we're told to look at the things which are not seen. For the things that are not seen are temporal. The things that are seen are eternal. So we're supposed to speak those things that are not as though they are. It's what Oprah and some of those people get into with The Secret, right? And The Secret is the ability to speak positivity into your life, and then it will happen. And if you speak negativity into your life, then you open the door for fear and negativity to come into your life. Okay? So it's very nuanced. So this is what you're supposed to do, and this is what Jesus was teaching. It means that if someone is sad and they're mourning and they're talking about what they're going through, you're not supposed to say, shut up, be happy. This is the day that the Lord has made again. We shall rejoice. No, you're not supposed to do that. When children come in, I remember my mom used to do that to me, and we laugh about it to this day, where I would say, you know, I feel bad. Don't you speak that into your life. Don't say that. Okay? Now, this is what mom was supposed to say. Later, she grew into this, right? She was supposed to say, Nathan, how do you feel? And I say, Mom, I feel sad. And she says, really? What's that like? And I say, well, it's like, you know, I just feel down. And then after she has met me, she's matched how I feel, and I've been heard, and I've spoken. Then she's supposed to say, well, you know what? I've learned that if I just, you know, pray and have a positive attitude, that joy comes in the morning. Trouble really doesn't last always. And then you model the joy. You don't beat the joy into me or get to spitting or grab some oil or start reading a scripture. There's nothing more provoking when Christians do that and they attack you. You're supposed to match their affect.
Right.
Become where they're at. Meet them where they are. And then begin to minister. And minister really means to listen.
Right.
Listen. Listen to me. Allow me to voice myself and voice my opinion. And then begin to share with me your testimony, what you went through, how you were down once. You were down. So what Christians do sometimes is, we're never down. I got faith. I got faith. I got faith. You know,
right.
Jesus, 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 Jesus. And so then I become a hypocrite. And then it's hard for me to listen to you if you cannot match my affect first, meet me where I am, and then grow. So I hope that made sense.
No, it does. And what it sounds like you're saying is that you want to make sure that you validate the other person in their experience before sharing your own, because unintentionally you can invalidate them by asking them to silence themselves or throwing scripture in their face. And I used to always wonder as a kid why I would roll my eyes in the back of my head when that would happen. And that makes perfect sense, because I felt like my story wasn't really being heard and it was just being generalized and therefore had no credibility, no validation.
And let me tell you what happens to children when you do that. So adults experience this all the time where, you know, you grow up now, and when your parent has invalidated you, when you've expressed an emotion and you said you're sad and they told you don't be sad, or they ignore your sadness, this is what you experience, couples, when you're talking to your spouse and you say, what's wrong? And then, commish, they look at you and they say nothing. They say nothing because they were taught that that emotion that they were experiencing is nothing. It's not real. And so then they don't know how to voice that I'm sad or that I'm hurt, because they were taught to put a scripture band-aid over it and ignore that. And so now they don't know how to express their emotions and feelings. And so that's typically spiritually what we're trying to unravel, is that false doctrine that you don't feel anything and you just have joy and peace, and it's not true.
Very true. Very true. Now, we have about 2 minutes before our next break, Nathan. Could you tell me, how does this concept of fear connect with your spiritual orientation?
Yes. So when I began to do this work and I came into contact with narrative therapy, Michael White was really good at allowing one to interview their problem. And it was in the midst of this that kind of highlighted everything I'm doing with my work with fear and anxiety. So what Michael White would do is, if someone was going through bulimia, you know, they're bulimic, or anxiety, or, you know, they were going through insecurity, he would have them play the role of insecurity and then begin to interview them. And they would play this role of insecurity, and he would ask them questions about how they attack this individual, which was them, but they were playing the role of the problem. In doing that, it allowed the person, after they came out of this interview, to do what we call externalization. So now they made themselves separate from the problem. And so they walked around now with a bit of confidence, because they realized, you know, I'm not the problem. Insecurity is the problem. Fear is the problem. Anxiety is the problem. That lines up so much with some of my spiritual beliefs, because we believe that we really have a spiritual enemy that attacks us. We really have this sinful nature that we're wrestling with that is the problem. And not to take any personal responsibility, we're not negating that, but it's allowing us to take the personal responsibility of separating ourselves and seeing ourselves different from this problem. Which allows us to have self-esteem, and we realize that this does not sum up who I am, that I go through this. This is something that I war against. So it brought to life texts like, we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but principalities, rulers of this dark world. It means that we are, in essence, in a fight, and if there is, you know, people that don't have, you know, these spiritual beliefs, I just talk about negative energy. You know, I talk about the fact that when you allow negative energy to come into your being and you operate according to that, how debilitating it is. So it lines right up, Kamish, with my spiritual beliefs, and have actually enhanced, brought clarity to some of the spiritual concepts that I've always held. But now I feel like I'm a little bit more understanding and have a little bit more wisdom on how to apply it with someone who doesn't believe and someone who does.
Absolutely. Well, let's take another quick break. When we return, we will discuss what treatment approaches are most effective for overcoming fear, and Nathan's new groundbreaking technique, the fear interview. And believe me, you do not want to miss this opportunity to learn more about this technique. Stay tuned.
The effects of trauma can last a lifetime. Pain, confusion, anxiety, depression, grief. Healing Your Hidden Hurts is a safe, serene environment dedicated to guiding you along your journey toward healing. The compassionate clinicians at Healing Your Hidden Hurts can provide the support, advocacy, and expertise to help you move forward again, regain stability. From fear to faith, despair to hope. Visit HealingYourHiddenHurts.com. Speak to a clinician today. Don't go at it alone. HealingYourHiddenHurts.com.
You're listening to Healing Conversations with Kamish Nunley on TalkZone.com.
Welcome back to Healing Conversations. I'm your host, Kamish Nunley, and the topic of today's discussion is breaking through the bondage of fear with guest host Nathan McGuire. If you'd like Nathan to speak at your next event, please visit EmpowerCCSD.com to learn more about his services. Also, every Monday, if you're local, make sure you tune in to 1310 AM The Light, where you can hear his weekly broadcast, The Love Connection Radio Show. Now, Nathan, you kind of started to venture into your new groundbreaking technique, but before we go into that, I know the incapacitating effects of fear and still struggle some days with overcoming the legacy effects, and if it's a pervasive problem that can resurface or peek its ugly head at any moment and in opportune time, we have to have practical strategies to be able to overcome it at any moment. So when we talk about addressing and conquering our fears, we need to take away a strong, effective approach that's short-term and sustainable over time. Now, I've chosen to include a clip today by Iyanla Vincent on conquering your fears. And Nathan, if you listen closely to her, I want to ask you a couple questions about what she has to share. So if we can go ahead and play that.
My definition of fear is distracting ourselves from the truth and becoming attached or addicted to the illusions of our ego, those things that keep us in doubt and in unworthiness and in lack. So the first thing that we have to do is have a ruthless, almost vigilant exploration of what it is that we're thinking and begin to identify those thoughts that create fear, those thoughts that support fear, and begin to dismantle them. We have a tendency to look outside, you know, let me take this pill, read this book, practice this thing. When the strength that we need to overcome our fear is really within us. Learning how to breathe through stuff, and calming the heart down, and filtering the energy. If you get a flip in your stomach, or if your heart starts to stop, okay, what is this? What's going on in my heart right now? What's going on in my stomach? Let it speak to you. It will. And then what we'll get to understand is some of the signals that the body has given us to just be aware that we've been translating as fear are really nothing to be afraid of at all.
Now, Nathan, I really enjoy the pausing and stilling of the moment where she talks about breathing and repositioning yourself. What are your thoughts on what she has to say in terms of overcoming and conquering your fears?
I totally embrace what she's saying. It's kind of a point earlier in the show where we were talking about, I believe, John Maxwell, where I remember reading some quotes, and I think one you sent me, that he was just talking about the certain elements and aspects of how to deal with anxiety and fear. And it's one of the reasons I'm a big advocate of yoga, because it allows us to relax and breathe and see ourselves. One of the things that stuck out to me that she mentioned was the ability to see oneself, to stop looking outwardly at enemies and look at the enemy, the enemy. And understand that there are enemies on inside of us. But if we do not begin to exercise violently, as she says, aggressively at what's going on in me, then we have an inability to have power And my favorite work is really mindfulness, insight, self-awareness. It's the ability to look at oneself, to take thoughts captive and realize what is going on and what am I mad about? What am I upset at? Who is it I haven't forgiven? What is it that I forgot I was frustrated about and I'm still frustrated about? What, why am I taking this out on everybody else? So one text that I really love, it says, the kingdom suffereth violence, but it's the violent who take it by force, right? Mm-hmm. It's those who are aggressive, who are hungry, who are warriors, who look at fear and attack fear and not people. Mm-hmm. Attack fear, but not oneself. So I agree with, and, you know, I think this is a major movement. You know, you look at the zeitgeist of the times, right, just the spirit of the times, and people are aware that fear is taking on, taking us in directions and debilitating us in ways, and there's a big crime prevention going on in Indianapolis, Indiana. But let me tell you, Commissioner, what the text says. The text says that fear or the enemy is the god of this world. It mm-hmm. just means that if you don't spiritually grow, that you will be overtaken with fear. And everything we do, where you live, what kind of car you drive, what school you go to, who you marry, why you got a divorce, that many times most of these things are driven by fear, and it's totally unconscious because we don't do the work we need to recognize that we are enslaved. And mm-hmm. faith is simply this, is there all those who are listening, when Kamish was talking earlier about the discrepancies, how fear and faith can't coexist, faith is just simply this. It's a small, still voice that says, everything is going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is going to be okay. When you're raptured in fear and you're struggling, this is what faith says. Faith says that everything is going to be okay. Fear says you're not safe unless you do this or unless you do this. Fear says this is your last chance and you need to imagine the worst case scenario. Mm-hmm. Faith says everything is going to be okay.
Right.
And
right.
those are really the distinct differences.
Right. Now, you mentioned yoga as a treatment modality for fear, and there's some other popular techniques out there, such as breathing techniques and other relaxation imagery techniques. But I think what makes your technique or your intervention unique is that it's more practical in terms of, I've had the opportunity to use it with a few of my clients, and they can pull on it wherever they are. And so you started to explain for us the foundation of where you developed this interview. But could you show us, I guess, step by step? We have about maybe 6 minutes left for our show, so maybe in about 2 minutes, step by step how you introduce the fear interview and walk a patient through it.
So I told you a little bit about Michael White, who introduced this whole concept of an intervention where someone is struggling with something, and then you have them interview the very issue that they're struggling with. So as I begin to go through this process, a lot of people were coming in talking about fear, anxiety, and worry. So I would have them, interview worry or fear. Or anxiety and just a plethora of things I would have them interview. And in the midst of this commission, I had just really the spiritual experience, and I really believe it was divine. Something through this process just told me to just have them interview fear. And commission, when I did that, it changed just the, just the whole scope of my practice. So what
right,
I would
and
do
I've
is
witnessed
I would,
it.
You've witnessed, yes, and
yes.
I've been asking other clinicians to help me do this and kind of give me the research, and we're going to present this. I'm writing up a book and a booklet to go with this, and commissions come alongside to help me, and it sounds like you have experienced some of the same things doing that.
Absolutely.
So what I did is I would have them interview fear, and I get to know their story, and they would play the role of fear, and I would ask them a simple question. I'm going to take you through some of these questions. So I would say, fear, so what is the situation where it's easy to influence or cause? Let's call the person Jane. You know, so Jane's the client. Fear, so what is the situation where it's easy to influence or cause Jane to worry or panic? And fear would say, hey, you know, when she is in a situation, she's out of control. And I'd say, fear, what is it you tell Jane in a situation? And they'll say, well, I tell her to panic. She doesn't know what's going on. She's not smart enough to deal with it. And I'll say, fear, does Jane believe you? Yes, she does. And I'd say, fear, when does Jane believe you? When Jane believes you, how does it make her feel? Makes her feel sad. What does it do to her energy? It drains her. Kamish, I watch fear systematically tell clients everything that it does to them, how it does it to them, what it caused. I would ask, when did you come into their life? And it'll say, when they were a little girl and their father wasn't there, I told them they would always be alone. They'd have to depend on themselves. And I watched fear literally explain to clients every single thing that they would do that it does to them. Now, the awesome thing, Kamish, was they would hear it in their own voice. And they thought that they were rationalizing or brainstorming, and they realized that this voice has been with them since they were a little kid. Mm-hmm. And nothing that it says was good. Nothing that it says was healthy. And then I would ask them, you know, have you told Jane that you're the one causing them the fear? No, of course not. You know, I've recorded these. I've videotaped these. And Kamish, the awesome thing is it's the same personality.
Right.
That's what kind of would bring goosebumps on me, right? So I'm interviewing it, kind of had this boldness, and it kind of have this smirk like, you know, Nathan, you know, you could do this all day, you know, but when you leave, I'll be there with him. I mean, right.
It sounds like they developed a codependent relationship with fear, and you're teaching them, as you talked about earlier, this concept of externalizing, and there's power within that. Now, I know that you can't go into the full interview today because we're about out of time, but
yes,
you do have a life coaching program that you are in the midst of developing. You're doing some research on this fear interview. Tell us, when is your next trainings or seminars where you are going to talk a little bit more about the fear interview and then even think about developing certifications for individuals with this fear interview?
So what I want to do is train individuals on how to do it and mm-hmm. then kind of have seminars and workshops exposing it. I'm going to have some things coming up at the end of June. So what I want you to do, if you find this interesting, want to kind of go through this process or be trained to use it, go to www.empowerccsd.com. That's empowerccsd.com. That's Empower Counseling, Coaching, and Spiritual Direction. And you can go there and find information about when I'm going to start this process.
Absolutely. And will you be providing trainings on other areas that you talk frequently about, such as abandonment, anger, and unforgiveness?
Yeah, so I have kind of a curriculum I'm working on where we're dealing with fear, and then we're dealing with abandonment, unforgiveness, and that piece of really understanding fear and mm-hmm. just kind of taking people through that whole process. And the last element of that is trust. And yeah, they're all really encompassed really in fear. Those are really the main areas that fear just has a way of debilitating people. So it's that workshop on fear and abandonment, and then just how to use the process. And then if you also want to take part in it and help to heal from kind of those pieces in your own life.
Absolutely, absolutely. So Indianapolis, now you have a place to go when we're talking about getting in touch with your vulnerabilities, understanding your fears, and how to conquer them. Thanks so much, Nathan. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Kamish.
Thanks to everyone that has decided to tune in today. I really hope the information provided helps guide you through your everyday life. And thank you again, Nathan, for being our guest and sharing your wealth of knowledge and wisdom on deconstructing fear. Like Nathan said, if you'd like to continue the conversation or learn more about his seminars, please visit empowerccsd.com. If you'd like to continue our conversation from today, please email us at hccnquestions@gmail.com or join us on our Facebook group page at facebook.com/groups www.facebook.com/healingconversations. Join us again on May 13th at 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time when we welcome national scientist Tom Palladino to the show to discuss his work on remote scalar energy healing, or better known as holistic transformation. Thanks again for tuning in to Healing Conversations with Kamish Nunley, where we believe what makes you vulnerable can also make you beautiful. Till next time, take care.